My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance. Ready in 30 seconds. Right now, get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Comfort is often the first thing we're willing to give up, like taking a long flight for a vacation or waking up early for a workout. But don't let style be the reason you aren't comfy. Mack Weldon's Ace Collection makes it effortless to look put together while feeling truly comfortable. Inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, the Ace Collection combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks. Upgrade your collection for the new year with new bomber jackets, half zips, sweats, crew necks, and much more. Get comfortable anywhere with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MACK25.
Alrighty, welcome to back to another episode of the College Baseball Show, Coach's Corner by Just Baseball Media. I'm Jared, that's Mark. We got another incredible guest with us today. We have head coach of the Cincinnati Bearcats, Jordan Bichel. Coach, welcome to the show, man.
Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, we're excited to chat with you. I know we've been following you guys for a while, the Big 12 baseball. But the first question you always ask, just for the viewers who don't know you, give a little bit of background on your journey in coaching and kind of how you've gotten to where you are today.
Oh, man, how long is the show today? We got an hour and a half, we got 2 hours.
We got like 3 hours here.
We'll give you the 10-cent tour here. The unique thing about me, I played small school Division III baseball in Wisconsin, St. Norbert College, and never crossed my mind that I was going to be a coach. Obviously, I was a like baseball, but my dad was a CPA, and so I went into the accounting world, Ernst & Young, huge accounting firm, auditor, all that good stuff, and I really thought that was my future. And then 2 or 3 years into it, just was not really waking up excited to go to work, and was helping out a little bit at the high school I had played at, and really enjoyed that part of life, and so I was dumb enough, young enough, naive enough to think it was a good idea to drop a good accounting job for a $4,000 a year stipend to move to Cleveland, Ohio, John Carroll University, to be an assistant coach at Division III school there. And obviously a lot of years in between, but Division III schools, part-time jobs, Division II schools, NAIA schools, you name it. I kind of been there, done that. It took me 8 years in coaching to get a full-time job. So that's probably the most unique part about the background is I think a lot of coaches just felt like that's where they're headed for a long time. And it really never crossed my mind, and got into it. And I guess here we are today, 20 years later.
No, I love it. We should have had Will on. Will's one of our college guys. He actually played at Edgewood. So
okay.
Yeah, right. he pitched there, I think, in like 2022 or something. Mark, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, coach, you know, successful season last year, obviously not, you know, ending in Omaha like you guys wanted to, but how do you just take from that and build on that? I know this fall has been really big for you guys, coach. How do you guys take some of that success from last year and just rebuild with that this year?
Yeah, what's nice is, you know, this is our staff's third year, and a lot of, I think, what we felt like we had to have more direct hands-on in year one and maybe year two, the players are starting to lead a little bit more. There's just more guys that have done it the way we historically do it. And so that's, we have a lot of new faces yet this fall. It's kind of the nature of college athletics, but when half your team is returners and really is ingrained in what we do, our culture, our style of baseball, it made for a little bit smoother fall. But, you know, we feel like everything we've done over the last 2 years was part of a process of making sure what we build is sustainable and repeatable and not putting all our eggs in one of your baskets. So I feel good it's going to keep heading in that direction. But flip side of that, we understand that in our league, in the Big 12, there's 14 teams that believe they have enough talent to play into June. And not all 14 of us are going to. So that's really the big challenge is you got to keep getting better. You got to keep pushing, because if you sit here and pull a muscle, patting yourself on the back for the good things you did, you're going to get passed up really, really quickly.
Yeah. I mean, it just happens, right? The game is fast. Everything changes quickly. Speaking on that, you know, bringing in all the new faces you guys have, do those guys look around and see like the guys that were in the locker room the last couple of years and be like, man, this could be me. I could be the next Carrington Cross. I could be that next guy that could lead the Bearcats to maybe to Omaha.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting feel, because, you know, 2 years ago, new guys showing up were showing up to be a part of trying to build something maybe that hadn't been done before. And not just winning games, but new to the Big 12. Everything was brand new, the coaching staff, the league, all that kind of stuff. And there's almost a good and a bad to it. When a guy walks in the door, he feels like he's a part of a winning team. And that's a positive, right? We want these guys feeling good about themselves, feeling like they're good players. But flip side, they haven't done anything yet. You know, they've done a lot to get here, but they haven't contributed directly to our success. And then it's their job to work and get better and fill those shoes. None of these guys is going to be Carrington Cross. We're not going to have another one of those guys, but we need guys to get better, to improve and be studs out there. And certainly I think it helps show some young guys there's a path. Carrington redshirted here as a freshman. He was an unsigned, you know, fourth year junior, our first year here. And then all of a sudden he's a conference player of the year. That shows that doing the things we talk about and sticking your nose in and working your tail off can make you not just a good player, but legitimately one of the best players in the country.
Yeah, Coach, you talked a little bit about it right there, but one thing I love to focus on is kind of building the program, building the culture with the transfer portal and things like that. Locker rooms constantly, just always overturning within college baseball. Even before the portal, that was kind of the case. But for you, what are some of the key things that you kind of instill to build that culture and to kind of build the program that you've built today?
Yeah, it is. It's challenging because we've had quite a few over the last 3 years, 1 year guys. Number one, some of those 1 year guys had been here three or four when we got here, but they were in their first year with our staff. But then the portals led to some of that. We're trying to get away from having too many of those transfers that are only here for a year. And there's nothing wrong with those guys, but to your point, it's difficult. We play a pretty specific style. It's difficult to learn that. We play pretty high energy. It's tough to really, you know, sell out for something that you just introduced yourself to a month before. And so we're trying to make sure we have some stability there. But if we're going to be good, we got to get those 1 year guys acclimated quickly. We got to get freshmen that can help us right away. What goes into that? I don't know. I think one of the things we do really well is we just do not spend a lot of time celebrating or preaching big individual successes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you don't win without individuals being successful. But my hope is at the end of the year, you know, whoever's backing up Carrington Cross still feels like they're a valuable part of the program, still feels like we care about them and want to see them grow. And it's our job to have them ready to, when the opening comes, fill in some of those shoes. And I think it's less a credit to our staff and more a credit to the Landon Vitericks, the Carrington Crosses, of being great teammates and showing those guys the ropes, but not acting like they're more important just because they lead off or they're all conference or they're a draft prospect. But everybody just showing up in that locker room saying we're 140th or going forward 134th of the puzzle, I think has been really, really valuable.
Yeah, and I love that mindset too. And I wanted to kind of build off of that, because I remember watching you all last year. I mean, you were one of the most fun teams to watch because of what you talked about, right? You all played as a team and you're a bunch of like grinders. I remember watching almost every game against that Duke series that led off the season, and just watching the way that like the team never gave up. The team was constantly trying to push for the wins. Talk a little bit about that and how you've kind of instilled that into the program too.
Yeah. You know, we do some things throughout the year just to make sure guys know that, like, every guy really does matter. We also encourage a ton of energy in that. I mean, one thing I think we lose sight of as baseball coaches, obviously we're baseball sickos and junkies, and we love this sport, and we think about it all the time. And we forget that, like, listen, this thing can be a little bit boring, right? Like, yeah. if I'm a guy who gets 19 at-bats this year, by the time we hit mid-April, like, the not that I don't want the team to win, not that I'm not invested, but yeah, like, I know I'm probably, like, the backup third baseman knows I'm probably not starting today. Carrington's gonna hit first, and so you start to check out a little bit. And so we've, I think, done a lot to celebrate little things, to get those guys engaged, to make sure that we point out, whether it's in a practice setting, a pregame setting, to talk about the good things that are going on, so that hopefully we find some little ways to say, when it's the fourth inning of a 48 degree midweek game in the middle of the season, and I know I'm probably not going to play, this is still enjoyable. This is still fun for me. And we're certainly not perfect at it, but I think it's been big. And it really is, as a coach, kind of the ultimate compliment when another team's coach says, it just seems like all your guys are bought in. And we're like everybody else. There's always going to be some issues. There's going to always be somebody unhappy. But if we portray ourselves as ahead of most with that, it certainly has value, and it makes it more enjoyable for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, Coach, you're looking at, like we just said, 34-man roster. When you go out and recruit for that, do you have to kind of figure out your mix of what you're going to have for transfers and freshmen coming in? I mean, that's a tougher roster now to be able to only keep the 34 and keep building this program.
Yeah, and we have, you know, there's an on-ramp there with the DSA stuff, mm-hmm. the designated student athletes, and we've utilized some of that. I don't know what everybody's doing, but we'll be at about 38 guys this year, and over the course of the next three or four, get down to 34. But we've never been a program that has signed more than we plan to take, has brought in more for the fall and made cuts. I'm not saying there's a right, wrong way to do that. I'm not criticizing the schools that do that. Everybody can do it their own way. But again, that goes back a little bit to the, I think the culture side is our guys know the guys they sign with are likely to end up here. Our guys know if they struggle as freshmen, it's not just a one-way ticket out the door. And I think that does make a big difference. But to your point, it's really, really challenging. We know there's going to be a lot of good players in the portal, and we know that a lot of those guys are looking to play at the highest levels, which the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC are going to offer. And so how many of those guys do you set aside room for? Do you have the money to go get those guys? How much do you take young guys and develop them? Again, there's no right answer to that. And what's interesting is that target probably moves every couple of weeks in a sense, because you know, Charlie Niehaus, our starting shortstop last year, had a good year. But if you would have told me middle of last year he's going to be a draft prospect as a redshirt sophomore, I'd have said, no, this is more of a great college player, a five-year guy. He's gone out and had just an amazing fall, and he's meeting with scouts this week. All of a sudden, we might have to plan to have a new shortstop that we thought might be here for three more years. And now we've got some high school guys in that class that have that some of that opportunity. And so how do you not overfill but protect yourself if there's attrition? And you know, even if you like your freshman class, not every guy is going to pan out. Really a guessing game and a balance. And I guess I don't have the answer to how you do that, except you evaluate it like crazy. We probably talk about it three or four times a semester, like where are we at with different guys? To me, this is where a little bit of the numbers background actually helps. You play some percentages. You know, we've got these three or four guys that we think have a decent chance to be drafted. We probably plan on two of them being out the door. We've got that group of four freshmen that are struggling a little bit. We know a couple are going to jump and do great, but a couple might not love it here and they might head out. Those type of things. Thankfully, we've been able to thread the needle where we haven't been short on bringing guys in, but we haven't over-recruited either.
Yeah, I love it. Coach, I wanted to kind of shift into the fall this season. I know you all just kind of got wrapped up. What were some of the insights that you kind of took away from this team from the fall? Were the guys that stood out? What are some of your expectations going into the 2026 season?
Yeah, so the really interesting thing, I think, you know, year three for us with this team, I think scouts would tell you it is hands down the best depth of talent we've had. You've got some of the high end. We've had some higher draft picks the last few years, and we've got some of that with Nate Taylor on the mound and Jack Natilli behind the plate, probably both settle into the top five rounds next year. But then there's a pretty long list of guys that fit that second list of prospects, have a chance to play pro ball, and that list is longer than it's ever been, which is great. That's obviously where we want to be. The unique part about our roster is only 13 of our 40 this fall were juniors and seniors. And if you look at the landscape of higher level college baseball, that's the exact opposite of most of what you see, right? Most I know we played Pitt and Purdue this fall, and I don't think either one of them had more than 12 freshman sophomores. We've got 27. I haven't had time to do the research, but I think if you looked at every Power Four roster, we have to be, if not the youngest, pretty darn close to the youngest. And so that's a unique dynamic of the talent level is rising, but there's a lot of youth there, which is really what our plan was. Once we had some time to get here and get our arms around quality recruiting classes, we knew we'd have to get younger to really maximize our ability. But it's kind of reminded me when you have some of these guys and they struggle a little bit, I have to have some patience. Like, we've got some guys that are going to be 19 and 20 playing against a lot of 22-year-olds, and that's a big gap. I think they'll get there. I think they'll catch up to it. But I think that's what we saw this fall. One day be like, man, these guys are good. And then the next year, like, Jesus, who are these guys? But I think that's part of when you're doing college baseball for the first or sometimes second time. It's challenging.
Yeah, Coach, you know, like we talked about, we're running up with fall ball being done here pretty soon. What's the toughest part from here until that February 13th date, you know, especially with 27 guys that are very young and still kind of learning their way across the college campus?
Yeah, I think what we try to emphasize to our guys is, as important as the fall is, and obviously it's massively important, that's our biggest practice block of the year.
Yeah,
you know, every program in the Big 12, I think, has a qualified coaching staff, has talented players. Nobody in September is sitting around doing nothing. Everybody's getting better, right? Everybody's practicing. We all have our own way of doing it, but everything we're doing to get better, somebody down the road is matching. And now we hit this stretch, November and December, where that changes a little bit. The rules really keep us from our guys for the most part. So where is there room to grow and make up ground? It's right now. You know, somebody out there has gotten a little lazy because they lost a little bit of structure, and somebody else is waking up with this huge fire of, I want to be great. And that's where the Carrington crosses come out of the woodwork. Right. And so that's probably a little bit scary, knowing we're really young. Some guys haven't been through this before. Right. They're probably just relieved, like, man, I got some off days. I got some time away. And how good do you want to be is going to depend on what you put into it. And then what's crazy about it is we do that for a couple of months, and January 12th hits and school starts, and we say, we play in 4 weeks. Like, we don't have 8 weeks to ramp up. We don't have 3 months. You know, basketball gets to campus in August, and they're just starting games in November. Like, once we go, it's time to play. So they have to come back in shape. And so it's just this weird, quiet, not sure what they're doing, to this all-out sprint overnight. And it's a unique dynamic for sure.
Yeah, it's nice this year, at least, right? We're getting the first time where we get more practices in January, and
yeah,
a little bit more of that.
That's incredibly important. They got that so right. I mean, the idea that 22 days, the opening day, we're still in a segment where we could play 4 hours of baseball a week, and then you're going to go on the field. You know, a game day, as you guys know, including pregame, it's, you know, they're on the field 5-6 hours. 3 weeks before that, we're not even allowed to do that in a full week. What are we really doing here? So that'll help. What's unique this year, the way the convention falls and our academic, we'll have 4.5 weeks the opening day, which is short. I think they set the calendar up as 5 weeks. And then the idea was, if school starts before that, you get a few ramp up days. And that will help a lot. This year is tightened up a little, just the way the calendar falls. But all of that change is really, really positive for our kids.
Yeah, Coach, I wanted to talk a little bit about a couple of individual players. You mentioned Nate Taylor and Jack Natilli kind of being the two top. To me, like, we do draft stuff too. Tyler Jennings leads our draft side. And Jack Natilli, I think, is a guy that not enough people talk about. Just super talented. Like, what does it mean to have, like, a guy like that behind the dish, kind of leading that pitching staff, but also kind of leading this team on the offensive side?
Yeah, and you know, he speaks to, when I talked about the portal and potentially 1 year guys, he speaks more to what we'd love to do in the portal, which, you know, he played at Rutgers as a freshman, didn't have a ton of success, but got some seasons.
The Fed's out of options, rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
I used to love my morning coffee until it stopped loving me back. The bloating, the discomfort, it wasn't worth it anymore. Then I found Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee blended with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics that's gentle on my stomach and gives me smooth, steady energy. Right now, get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
But he's still young when he got here, right? And so where that becomes more valuable is the first half last year, Jack was just not the player he is now. He was getting better. He was improving, but he's learning what we're trying to do. He's learning our hitting approach. And now to go into the year knowing he's settled, he's seasoned, he knows who he is, that's where those leadership qualities can start to come out. The trust can start to come out. And that's huge. I mean, it's just, it's getting harder and harder to find guys that have been in a program as a starter for multiple years, but at that position and then a high-end player, it really is. It's really big. And you can see he is leading more. He's taking more command. It's hard when you come in your first year just to say, hey, I'm going to take control of this pitching staff. You know, you're walking on eggshells. And now he's empowered to do that. Really valuable piece, obviously.
Yeah. I know Jared and I both loved him. We both tried to draft him in our fantasy draft before the preseason here. But speaking a little bit just about the conference, Coach, you know, last year started a little slow for a lot of Big 12 teams, kind of slower start, and then got red hot at the end of the season, and that whole conference took off. Just talk a little bit about competing in this conference and just the talent that's all around.
Yeah, it's really good. You know, I'm not speaking negatively about the Big 10, but what's interesting with the landscape of college sports is the SEC and the Big 10 right now, that the revenues are through the roof, right? They're controlling a lot of things, and they're both pumping crazy money into basketball and football, and then baseball fits somewhere in that. But what's interesting is in those sports, you've got two major heavyweight conferences, and the ACC and the Big 12 in football certainly are good, but they're a decent step behind, right? And in baseball, because of the northern climates and some other factors, you maybe don't see quite the investment, and which allows the ACC and the Big 12 to really elevate from being a good but definitely number 3 and 4 conference to competing to be that second best conference. And so that leads to, I think, a level of play that is really good. And then you just add in the tradition of some of these schools, the Arizona States, the Oklahoma States. I mean, you've got TCU's schools that either have won national titles or had made real runs at national titles. And you combine those two things, Texas Tech, I mean, the list goes on, creates some really, really cool dynamic. To your point, the starting slow, I think one thing we do, maybe almost to a fault, is we really challenge ourselves in the non-conference. Again, I'm not going to speak negatively about anybody else, but if you look at the number of round-robin national invitationals we're going to, we went on the road last year to Duke. How many teams in the power leagues do you see going on the road to play a perennial NCAA team opening weekend? Yeah. And so I think that's part of a little of the up and down early. And then we've got some northern teams ourselves, West Virginia, Kansas State. They're going to struggle to play at home a whole lot early. So, but what that all leads to is you toughen guys up, you get better, you grow from those things, you get used to playing on the road. And I think that's why you saw late in the year some really quality competitive baseball. What's unique to me is the depth of the league. It's last year, the best example I can give is Central Florida. I think Coach Wallace is really, really good at his job. And we played them late March. Now, we swept them, but they were three really hard-fought games at our place. And our coaches were like, that team's good enough to win the Big 12. That's an NCAA tournament team. They ended up, I don't know where they ended up, but towards the bottom. And that's, to me, it's not a slight of them. It's when you have that competition every week and you get in a little funk, the margins are so small that good teams can start losing a lot of games. And I think they were the poster child of, like, man, it's pretty hard to win in this league.
Yeah, I mean, you looked at this conference in April, and you could have picked any of the top eight teams and been like, this could be a team that's in Omaha, this could be the team that wins the conference, or they could miss the thing completely. That's how deep it was last year. And I see a lot of that again this year, Coach. Speaking of schedule here, you know, you guys miss Arizona, Arizona State this year. When you look at the Big 12 schedule, do you go, all right, we got some teams, but really, is it just so deep you're like, we got to face whoever's in front of us anyway?
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately, if you look at, again, last year for us, I mean, who'd have thought we'd go into Kansas and win all three games? That's pretty impressive. If we don't do that, they probably host the regional if they win that series. Flip side, we lost two out of three at home to BYU, and that's no rip on BYU. They were good. They had good players. They were experienced. They had some old kids. Like, it was a good team. We didn't lose because we stunk. We lost because they're pretty good. So, to your point, there's no weekends in this league you circle and say you're just going to win a series. Certainly, when all is said and done, there's a decent chance based on who we miss that we won't have the strongest in-league schedule, but that doesn't guarantee a whole lot. And what's interesting now is with RPIs and metrics and you know, all that kind of shakes out in the committee room anyway. Last year we finished eighth, which in theory was not, you know, even top half of the league, but we didn't play, I think it was Baylor, Houston, and Utah, which, again, good teams, but not at the top of the league. They took that into account, that we played every one of the top five or six teams, and that's probably worth a game or two in the standings, which is why we weren't on that last four in line. We were a little higher, even though our league's standing. So it kind of works itself out, but had to pay attention to it a little bit, just making sure we keep the right balance. But again, to your point, whatever 10 we play, they're going to be challenging games.
Fair. Last question I got before we dive into some fun ones. So as we kind of approach the 2026 season, like, what's something fans don't see about this team that they should know going into next year?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think probably more than anything, it's pretty easy to look at our offense and kind of identify a lot of key pieces. You know, Quentin Coates, Derek Pitts were freshmen that were starting second half. You expect them to take a jump. I mentioned Charlie at shortstop, obviously Jack behind the plate. Cal Sefcik played a lot of left field. Even our transfers, Conlon Daniel coming from Wright State, was a good everyday player for them. It's pretty easy to circle the success points there. The pitching has so many new faces. Nate Taylor's going to anchor it on Fridays, but then there's so much in there that's unsettled. I think there's a lot of upside in that group, and I think we're going to see some names that are pretty big under the radar that really help us, whether it's, you know, Brendan Garula was a key relief / spot starter for us 2 years ago, missed last year with the UCL. I think he's really good. Like, and people forget he was on our roster because he was hurt last year. A couple of freshmen, Connor Blue, Chad Brown, that we think they're every bit as good as Nate Taylor was at this point 2 years ago. Does it mean they're going to be Friday starters? I don't know. But, like, people don't know who some of these guys are. I think that pitching staff, the talent level there has significantly upgraded. I think that's going to shake out at some point.
I love it. Mark, you want to kick off the fun questions, or you got any more on your end?
No, we'll get into the fun ones here. Coach.
Nobody's ever compared me with fun, so good luck.
Well, what do we do when it's not baseball? You know, a lot of us baseball fans, we jump into golf, we go do other stuff, like limited, but, you know, all of us baseball fans and people in the game love baseball so much, but you got to do something else. What do you do outside of baseball, Coach?
Yeah, that's probably one of the blessings or curses of a lot of coaches at this level is they don't have a ton else they really, really enjoy. Like, I don't often feel like I'm missing much. But end of next week, we're jumping on an airplane. We're flying down to Florida. We're going 4 days on a Disney cruise.
All right, let's go.
Followed with some days at Disney World. We have been overly addicted to Mickey Mouse and all his pals down there. The nice thing is it's super inexpensive. Hardly any price points there, right? But that's kind of our getaway, our home away from home. November, December is when it gets a little quieter for us, a little bit of downtime in the summer. So we've got twin boys that are 8 and then a 6-year-old. We end up down there probably more than we need to, but that's kind of our release, get away from it all. That's a big one. And then starting to get into that youth sports scene, the little guys playing they had their season-ending soccer tournament 3 years ago, the 2 8-year-olds, but somehow they're still playing this weekend. They keep playing. They didn't tell us the season-ending tournament was a month long. So Saturday, we got all our 26 signees coming to campus. But before I hit that up, I'm going to hit an 8-year-old soccer game, and we're hopefully not too cold.
Love it. Love it, Coach.
Yeah, that's awesome. For you, Coach, besides your own home park, what's your favorite park to travel to on the road?
Oh, man. This goes back a little ways, but my first year at Central Michigan, and mind you, I was a Division II coach, Division III player. I mean, 1 year in the MAC where, you know, you have a few games with maybe 500 fans or whatever, but not a lot of playing in front of crowds or playing at amazing venues. So we have a great first year at Central Michigan. We make the regional. We get to the selection day. Sure enough, our line pops up. We're playing the University of Miami, which obviously just a blue blood program, at Mississippi State. So, I mean, if you want to totally spoil your college baseball experience forever, go to Mississippi State, because nothing is going to be as cool as that. I mean, it was, you know, and we beat Miami in the opening round. So we had a Saturday night winner bracket game against Mississippi State, the energy of that place. But what was so unique is they really do treat people well, too. Like they're going to give our guys a bunch of barbecue during BP in the outfield from those suites. And then they're going to try to kick our ass the whole game. And then they're going to try to get them drunk after the game. Like it was an awesome environment. So it's really, really hard to top that. That was awesome. Within our league, Oklahoma State their facility is on par with Duty Noble in terms of the amenities and how nice. It's just not as big. But Coach Holiday and the people there they've built kind of a mecca in and of itself. Those two places really jump out.
Love it.
Yeah. Love it, Coach. Okay. A lot of people always ask, what's the game day food ritual? Do you got anything that you go to? Any game day snacks? Anything in the dugout you have to have? I know for me, if I didn't have Red Vines, I wasn't coaching that day. I was having a bad day. If there was no Red Vines in my dugout, I was having a real rough day.
They give our guys so much food now. Like, again, I'm a small school guy. Like, we got a cold cheeseburger, a sub sandwich between games, and I yelled at if I ate it because you're supposed to play hungry. And so I see all this. That's the vice for me is they feed these guys thousands of calories because they're running around, and I'm sitting there just watching them, and I eat the same thing. So the only thing for me, I have an absolute Diet Mountain Dew addiction. It's a problem. I've actually got in this little plastic cup today. Get this. I'm so cheap. I buy the 2-liter bottles. It's a better bang for your buck. But that made its way on to a couple of our broadcasts last year. And by the end of the year, Mountain Dew is actually tweeting at me. I don't even know how to use Twitter, but they do. They had found me. My wife found them. So I'm going to show you right back here. At the end of last year, it found its way on. They sent me this cooler.
Yes,
you can see it up there. So that is the vice. That is it. I figure it's not good for me, but it's a hell of a lot better than tobacco or booze. But we get through it.
That's fair, Coach. That's fair. I always had the Diet Mountain Dew and the Red Vines, so I had to cut out the Red Vines.
If you remember, a couple of years ago, Austin Peay was on, and their coach actually, he got dumped from a game, and he walked out with a 2-liter bottle of this stuff, Diet Mountain Dew. We've got a series with them this year, and so he thinks he can drink me under the table. we might find out.
Love it. I was going to say on the food side, I worked in minor league baseball at like the Arizona Complex League, and all those college guys would get there and they'd be like, oh, we got peanut butter and jelly now. We used to get these fruit spreads.
These guys have no idea how spoiled they are. And like, guys, you don't even Central Michigan, I mean, we're a quality Division I program, but like, we didn't have these. And all of a sudden I look around, I'm like, they need a smoothie. They just had a box lunch, and an hour before that they had a breakfast, and before that they had snack. Like, but I get it. They need it. It's good for them, but it's crazy.
I know. I visit all these schools now. I'm like, I remember my JC days. It's like, we had like a literal bag of lunch. Like, it was like you had a sandwich and maybe a bag of chips, and that's what you had. And then now you go in, it's like the food spread at these places is insane. I love it. I mean, taking care of the players is good.
Yeah, this is when we talk about when we went to the field, it was uphill both ways and snowed the whole way. Yeah, everything was shitty when we were younger, right? Am I allowed to say shit? I apologize if I can't.
No, you're fine,
Coach. We're good.
Last one I got for you is if you could coach any team past or present, no matter what sport, which team would you coach?
Oh my God. I haven't even thought about that. You know, I grew up in Green Bay, and, they traded for Brett Favre when I was, I think, about 10 years old. So, you know, the Packers were dominant in the '60s, and then the '70s and eighties, they forgot they even had a franchise. And so I was 10 when they traded for Favre. So I was super lucky. So my first, like, legit high level. I was 15 when they won the Super Bowl in 1996, and they were dominant. They had Reggie White on one side and Brett Favre on another. But, you know, as much fun as it would have been to be around that, probably more fun would have been seeing how Brett Favre lived his life off of the football field, because that guy was, I think, an animal. So it, actually coaching, it probably would have been awful, because you're sitting there worried about your MVP quarterback and whether he's out trick-or-treating and causing pranks or doing stuff. I mean, like the stories you hear in Green Bay. But that would have been a pretty amazing group to be around. Anything that would have involved Michael Jordan, man, that guy. You know, but those days they didn't, WGN put every one of their games on. And so growing up in Wisconsin, I was, I guess, a Bucks fan, but it's the Bulls that were on all. So you have the best player in the sport on TV every single night. And nobody else was at that time, right? They don't have, you know, ESPN didn't have as many games. So I when they were on TV, if I would have had a chance to spend a month watching that guy do his job, I'd imagine that would have been one of the coolest things ever.
I love it. Mark, you got anything to wrap up?
That's it, man.
What about you guys? What's team you're around?
Oh, man. For me, it would have been any early 2000s Oregon State football. Like, that was like when I was growing up and playing football, and, you know, I was idolizing those guys. I think it would have been fun to go back to, like, the 2001 team that won the Fiesta Bowl against Notre Dame. Team should have been in the national championship. They're a missed field goal away against Washington from being 12-0. I think that would be fun to be back, just be a part of that thing, just, you know, being part of the greatness.
Yeah, I'm a big Royals fan, so I'd go back to that 2015 team just because of the way they played the game. It's kind of similar to the way you all play the game, just like next man up, basically.
Yeah, they were tough, man. I was at Northwest Missouri State before I was a head coach for 3 years, and then I went to Midland University in Nebraska for two. So I was, you know, I had moved out of that part of the country by 15, but a lot of the people I had worked with and been around it were big Royals fans. So I had a little bit of pride in seeing that happen. And being a Brewers guy, you love the small market story. And that's an awesome setup in that area, though.
Yeah.
Between the football stadium, it's funny because you probably remember this. I assume you're a Chiefs fan too, then.
No, I became a Royals fan because I worked for them.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I'm not from Kansas
City. Bring up that area. I went to one Chiefs game when I lived in that area, and there was a year that they were like 1-11 or something, and they fired their coach, and Romeo Crennel becomes the interim coach. The Packers had Rodgers at the time. They're 13-0 going to be the next undefeated ever. And so I go to the game like, hey, I get to see sure enough, the Chiefs with one win beat the Packers, and then they're surrounded by 70,000 people that are just in heaven. And I'm thinking, how on earth? So that was my one experience there.
I love it. Yeah, no, I worked for the Royals until 2013, so I missed both the 2014 and 2015 World Series runs.
We'll pretend there's no correlation between you and Morgan. you were the building blocks.
Yeah, yeah. I was there for all the rebuilding years, you know. Coach, we can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule. I know it's a busy time of year for you all. We're just super appreciative to have you on to share the kind of your story and just give a preview of the upcoming season. So we're going to be wishing you all nothing but the best.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You know, I think it's important that we thank you. You know, college baseball has grown just immensely. And we talk about the food our guys are getting. Like, all that doesn't happen without exposure to the sport. Ultimately, our schools see it as a revenue driver and a value-added area. And it's because people are talking about us. And it's guys like you that dig into it and invest in it. It means a lot. So thanks a bunch for having me on.
Thanks, Coach. Love it.
So appreciate it, guys. Have a good weekend.